Welcome to The Stacks. My name is Tracy Thomas, and I am your host here. This is a podcast all about books. This week, I am joined by my guest, Chris Maddox. Chris is a TV writer and actor, and we discuss a whole lot about how reading is part of his creative process and how, even though he would like to read for pleasure, he's almost always reading for work. We also discuss the importance of seeing oneself reflected back in the books that we read. This week, our sponsor is Audible. Audible is an amazing resource for those of you who love audiobooks. They have over 180,000 titles for you to choose from. And if you're new to Audible, you can get a free trial and a free audiobook just by going to audibletrial.com/thestacks. And lastly, as a reminder, everything we talk about this week on the show will be in the show notes, so you don't have to write anything down. Okay, let's do it. Here I am talking with my guest, Chris Maddox. Hello and welcome to The Stacks. I am your host, Tracy Thomas, and I am joined today by a television writer and dear friend of mine, Chris Maddox.
Hello, hello, hello. Hi. Thanks for having me.
We're so excited that you're here. We're just going to jump right in. So Chris writes a bunch. He writes for television. So I'm going to be honest. Before I kind of moved to LA and started understanding how TV and film and everything worked, I didn't realize that there were rooms full of people who were doing the writing for all my favorite shows. So can you kind of explain what it means or what it is that you do as a television writer?
Yeah, it is a curious thing. I mean, growing up, you just imagine, oh, there's one person writing all of these episodes of television. And it wasn't until I landed in Los Angeles that I learned there's this whole group of people that help create the world that you immerse yourself into on a weekly basis. And generally there is a person at the helm called a showrunner, and he or she is in charge of, he's sort of the go-between between the studio, the network, the writer's room, production. And then he or she hires a group of people ranging from 5 to maybe 10 people or more to craft the world, to populate the world of each episode of the series. And we sit in a room and we break stories, which means we try to figure out what's going to happen in each episode. And it's a fun process. It's, you get to, you know, create a backstory for a person that doesn't exist. And then All of a sudden they do. It's pretty magical.
That's awesome. And so I know this about you, but I do want you to tell our listeners, how much reading do you do to create television? Like, how much reading are you doing to find stories or to create worlds or find if it's based on something true, you know, if it's a medical drama, find actual medical instances where these things have happened or something along those lines?
I'm constantly mining for story. Reading newspapers, articles, clippings, books, listening to the world around me. If you're working in broadcast television, it can be up to 23 episodes a year.
Wait, can you tell people what broadcast television is?
So broadcast is like your big network television shows, NBC, ABC, CBS, and then there's also, you know, cable, which are, you know, HBO, Showtime, FX. And those are at smaller orders, you know, 13 episodes. But still, you're constantly trying to, you know, find new stories, new ways into story. And my way in is always what's happening, what's being printed, what's being talked about. So it's always having my ears perked up and listening to the world around me. And the best way to do that is to immerse yourself in books, newspapers, magazines, anything.
I love it. When you're writing for a show or you're working and creating a show, because I don't think a lot of people know this, but writers constantly write pilots, which are intro episodes, the first episode of a show that they use to pitch their writing and their story. Mm-hmm. And those pilots often don't get made or don't get picked up, but you're constantly writing them, right?
Yes, absolutely. You have to always, or you don't have to. Some people sort of survive working off one old, you know, pilot sample for years. But your tastes change as just in general. And so the only way to let the world know how you see the world is to create something new. And I try to do at least one new sample a year, sometimes two. Right. But it takes time to sort of build out a whole world. And so it's important to do that.
Got it. And how much of your reading would you say is for pleasure? So like you're reading something that you just want to read and then you find a story that you're interested in versus picking up a book because you think, oh, this might make a good story for television.
I'm a very goal-oriented person.
I love that.
So it's become challenging for me to read for pleasure because it's all, I always have a motive behind it. So I kind of don't, but my work is pleasure. So
enjoy reading,
yeah.
But you always kind of have one eye open. Like, could I make this person in their own television show?
Yes.
Like, could the mother in this book maybe just have a whole other life outside of here?
Can I option this book? Can I adapt this book?
Who wrote this again? No, yeah. That's amazing. Okay. Okay. So you're mostly, it's both pleasureful because you enjoy reading, but also with an eye open to doing something maybe more with it in the visual medium.
Yes.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. This is something I've always wondered about television writers. When I watch a TV show, I'm like, what's going to happen next? Oh my God, I'm so excited. What's the twist? Can you watch a TV show and know where it's going?
Yes.
Almost always.
Usually.
Usually.
I mean, it does, you know, sort of like being in the kitchen, because I know how to make the sausage.
Right, of course.
And so it's fun to sort of guess and see if you're right.
Right.
But I also love when I'm wrong. And it's so rare to have that happen, you know, to ride the journey that these creators are taking you on, whether it's a film or TV show. That's really exciting. And when they do that, I'm like, oh my gosh, I did not imagine they were going to do that.
Is there any show that you could think of where you're like, I always guess wrong?
Well, Lost was a good example.
Okay. Lost kept you guessing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was the ride that they took us on, and they listened to a lot of social media to sort of create that. I've heard.
Okay,
I was in the writers' room, so I shouldn't really speak for anybody. So, but I will say, Call Me by Your Name, a feature really the last 5 minutes writing that journey. Like if an actor can do that,
sure.
Like writing sometimes can be predictable,
right?
But it's also, I think, an actor's job to sort of take you on another journey. So,
right, to keep it fresh.
Yeah.
Because you also are an actor.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. Some people, listen, if you want to know what Chris Maddox looks like, I'm not going to tell you where you can find him, but I am going to tell you that he played a hairdresser on Scandal in a very important scene between Olivia Pope and Annalise Keating on the crossover episode. And he's there and he was asked to leave the room. And it was a gorgeous scene. So I'm just saying. But yeah, so you're also an actor.
Yes.
So you appreciate not only how, you know, the writing process, but also how to turn that into something exciting and interesting.
And that is the amazing thing about television and film, because it's what has to happen is my vision as a writer has to be articulated on the page. Then that has to be what my vision of that world then has to be on the page. And then you have to sort of see that, right? But then what happens when you give those pages to an actor, he then uses his own story, his own backstory, his own vision of this character. And then that is then reflected on the screen. And so it's through all of these lenses.
Right.
And it changes from me to you to the actor. So it's an interesting process.
Okay, here's the real question. When you read a book or an article or whatever, when you read something and you're imagining turning it into a show or turning it into an episode or incorporating it in an episode or something, have you ever visualized what that would look like and then actually seen the episode and been like, that's exactly what I thought it was going to be? Like, it worked. Or that is so much better than I thought. I can't even believe that this little idea turned into this amazing thing. Like, has that ever happened?
For me personally?
Sure.
Well, the last show that I was working on, yes. I mean, it's sort of an important part of the process because in TV writing, we are the producers. And so we were able to articulate and to, we have like what's called tone. And so you talk with the director and everyone on staff and production to really make sure that they sort of see the world that I'm trying to create on the page, and then they produce that.
Mm-hmm.
So usually it is kind of what you want
it to be. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so when you're reading, then you're visualizing also. If you have your eye on doing the work, you're not just reading. You're
visual. I mean, it's a visual medium. I mean, and so I have to visualize it and then write that visual down very, very clearly.
And are you even, like, when you're reading something, are you even thinking to yourself, wow, Kerry Washington would be amazing in this? Or are you a little bit less specific about who you envision in the roles?
Kerry Washington is great in everything. So, yes.
Listen, where's the lie? Kerry Washington is great. But I mean, like, are you getting so specific that you're like, okay, I need Patricia Arquette, like this, or, you know, I don't know, whoever, Oprah, or maybe not Oprah, maybe someone less well-known, but like that you're like, oh, that girl I saw in that episode of Grey's Anatomy, she would, like, that's who I see in this. You are that specific.
Yeah,
as you're reading, it kind of pops up in your head.
Mm-hmm. This actress or actor, this is them. And that helps, you know, push the needle towards actually making a project happen.
Right.
But also, sometimes you don't want someone who's a star name.
Right.
You want someone who is unknown and a fresh take on a new idea.
Sure.
And that's equally valuable. But in today's market, you kind of need someone to help get made.
Right. Okay. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Okay. We're going to talk a little bit about how you like to read or what you like to read. So my first and most favorite question always are, what are two books that you love?
Okay. I love that question, first of all.
I know, it's just so nice to luxuriate in, like, the most delicious books of your life, because I feel like a good book, when you talk about it, you feel things. And so I love that question, because I just feel like it's like the warmest hug to start with.
It is.
It is.
Well, this book I read on my journeys in New York when I lived there on the train, on the subway, going back and forth to work, Anna Karenina. And that book just takes me to the world. And really, both books are from Russian authors, in Crime and Punishment.
Whoa. So there's a question coming up later that's a book you're proud to have read. Mm-hmm. And the last 2 weeks, Sarah and Dallas, those were their two books.
Really?
Anna Karenina and Crime and Punishment. Those are the two books they were proud to have read. Yeah.
Because they're
these
beasts.
Books are apparently the books of the show, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I love that my loves are their
pride and joy.
Yeah, which is also nice.
Sure. Okay, tell us why you like those books so much.
They took me on a journey, a world, a love. You know, one is a love story, you know, unrequited love, which I love.
Mm-hmm.
And then Crime and Punishment, just the torture, of murder and then what happens to a person having done something that was bad.
Right.
And it's really, really, they're both psychological journeys of both of these different people.
Mm-hmm.
So I really
There's a lot there.
Yeah.
They never end.
They're with me. You know, that's the great thing about books. They're these characters.
They stay with you.
Yeah, they stay with you.
And have you read either of them more than once?
No.
Do you ever reread?
There's one book that I have reread a number of times.
What book is that?
Giovanni's Room.
You guys, that's what we're discussing next week. So May 9th, Giovanni's Room. This wasn't supposed to be a plug, but we are discussing it next week. So just get reading. Okay. What's one book you hate?
Tracy, come on now.
Why do people have such a hard time with this? I feel like I could list 100 books that I hate.
Well, the thing is A, that I'm a writer, and I know what an arduous process it can be.
Sure.
And I think anyone who's putting pen to paper and going through that process, they deserve it's not appealing to me.
Sure, that's fair.
But they should be applauded.
That's fair. I agree. I think writing is one of the hardest things you can do. And when I hate a book, it's that I hate the book, but I often will recommend books to people that I didn't like, because I'm like, this, just because I didn't like it doesn't mean that this book doesn't have a place in someone else's life or in someone else's heart. Like, I'm very rare to recommend fiction because I don't really love fiction, mm-hmm. but I've read fiction that I've thought, oh my gosh, like my mom would really like this book. Mm-hmm. And I personally was like, this book is garbage. Like, I did not like it, but that's just, you know, reading is so personal.
It's
and I
so
think
personal.
That's what makes it so special. So, you know, I understand what you're saying. Like, there's a respect level that goes to anybody who writes a book. And I totally agree. And I respect you for not hating on anybody, but I'm a hater.
Well, it's like I never going to see a film. I never want to say, oh, I hated that film, you know, right. before someone else has their own personal
has
opinion.
Their own response. And also, like, you know, just because something doesn't click with you doesn't mean that there's not value in it.
Right.
Even a Gigli, which mm-hmm. many people hate. I have friends who love Gigli. It's just, there's something about camp, you know? Glitter, another Glitter. Great film that people love. I never thought we'd talk about Glitter on the podcast, but I've done it.
There it is.
Okay, so what's the last great book you've read?
It was Turning the Mind into an Ally.
What's that about?
It's about... Well, my one big takeaway is, well, I learned that my thoughts are not who I am.
Oh, that sounds very crucial to learn.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was mind opening.
I love that. Okay. Okay.
So I recommend it to everyone who's looking to detach themselves from thought, just walking in the world. It's a good read. And not too long.
Okay.
But very powerful.
Okay. By the way, before we get too far, every single book that we mention today and every article we talk about will be in the show notes and on the website. So you don't have to write it down. I know some of you are driving in your car. Please do not be on your phones. I will leave it in the show notes. You can click it. It will take you where you need to go to find the book. So drive safely, my friends. I got messages from people being like, I tried to write everything down, but I was in the car. And I'm like, oh my God, don't do it. It's in the show notes. It's right there. Please drive safely.
Drive. Get to your destination.
Please, please. Okay. What are you reading right now?
Right now I'm reading, my grandmother, MJ Sims Maddox, has written a trilogy.
Ooh.
And I'm in the second of the three, called, Mystery in Harare.
Ooh.
And so that's what I'm currently reading.
What's her trilogy about?
It's it follows the protagonist. Her name is PG. I'm sorry. Apologies, MJ.
Grandma, please don't come on.
Her name is PJ.
Okay.
And it follows her. She's sort of like an Olivia Pope.
Ooh. Kerry Washington, if you're listening, yeah. We've got a role for you coming up.
Exactly.
Amazing. And so she's like a fixer.
She's more of a political science professor, activist. She works in Washington. She travels around the world. Operative. She's a badass.
Love
it.
I
can say badass.
You can. You can say badass. It's a podcast. Okay. What's besides the third book, what's a book that you're looking forward to reading?
Okay. I was at a friend's house last week and he was reading Ship of Theseus. By J.J. Abrams.
Oh.
And
that's the television that's Breaking Bad?
That
is
it.
That,
no.
Who not, am I thinking of?
You're thinking of...
I don't know.
Oh, gosh.
I'll Google it. Me. You keep talking. I'll Google it.
So Ship of Theseus is a new book that's, I think, recently out. And it's really thick. And you look in the margins and... And there are all these little notes in the margins. And so you're supposed to read the book five times. And there's different, like a pathway through each of the reads.
Okay.
So you read the novel first. And then you read like the notes in red next. And the notes in blue next. And there are all these different pieces of paper inside. So it's like this, you know, choose your own adventure kind of a mystery. I've not read it, but I'm okay. Really excited
that
about
it. That sounds really cool.
It's a great idea.
I love that. Okay, so... This is the showrunner, trivia alert, the showrunner for Breaking Bad is Vince Gilligan?
Vince Gilligan, yes.
How did I get J.J. Abrams from that?
Because J.J. has his hands in everything,
I guess,
so why
sure.
not think that
sure.
he's written everything?
You can have credit for it, J.J., don't worry. okay, what's a book that's on your nightstand, or a few books, or whatever? What's on your nightstand?
on my nightstand, a friend gifted me this for my birthday in December, and it's the early stories of Truman Capote.
Ooh.
So many of his earlier works, his short stories, and they're fabulous. I think the short story is a great unmined wealth of luxury. It's mm-hmm. just, you just sit down 5, 6, 7, 10 or pages or longer. Sometimes yeah. really short story can be, you know, 20, 30 pages.
Sure.
But it's great.
That's probably a really good place for you to find
yes.
material,
yes.
right? Because a lot of people don't read short stories.
No, they don't. And I think like a novel is to television adaptation as a short story is to film.
Sure.
Because short stories are close-ended,
mm-hmm.
Like a film.
Mm-hmm.
A novel are chapters like a TV show.
Sure. That makes a lot of sense, actually. I've never really thought about it that way, but it does make a lot of sense. What's a book that you love to recommend to people?
Oh, I love this question so much.
I do, too.
One of my sort of secret pleasures is this book called I Know This Much Is True.
Okay.
By Wally Lamb.
Okay.
And
I know that book.
Oh, God.
It has like the girl's face on the cover and it's like water and sky or something, right?
Is that?
I don't know. That's a Wally Lamb book. I'm sure everybody is listening to this in their car screaming the titles of whatever. Like they're like, Vince Gilligan, you idiot. I Know This Much Is True. Wally Lamb has a book with a girl on the cover, right?
Well, this book is a female protagonist. And she's I believe it's been several years since I've read this, but she's a larger woman. So maybe that's her face on the cover. I don't know.
No, it's a different book. It's She's Come Undone. I'm an Asshole.
Oh, She's Come Undone.
That's also Wally Lamb,
also
though.
Really good.
And it's that cover.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's really good, too.
Is it? I've never read it. My mom used to have it. I used to always look at the cover.
Oh, my gosh. Wait a minute. Am I mixing those? Maybe I'm mixing those two up. I've read both of them.
Okay. Well, you like both. But
I
you
like
recommend
both.
One.
Yes.
And the other one, you're like, oh, my God, didn't you love that part? And they're like, I don't remember that. Because you picked the wrong book.
I know. Exactly.
Okay. So you recommend I Know This Much Is True.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you would also recommend She's Come Undone, possibly.
100%.
Okay. So that's a twofer.
It's a twofer. Wally Lamb.
Wally Lamb.
Hands
getting
up.
A twofer. Okay. What's a book? What's the last like really good book that someone has recommended to you?
I was out to lunch with one of my favorite authors last week, Andre Debus. And he said, stop what you're doing right now and read Elizabeth Strout. She's American novelist, really great at her descriptive characterizations, and he's publishing his new book coming out soon, and also an anthology, and I think she may be in it potentially, maybe not, but anyway, he highly recommends her, and I cannot wait to dive into her work.
What was the name of the book, or just anything by
just
her?
Just anything by
okay,
her.
Okay, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
He did recommend something very specifically, but it's not landing on me right now. But
that's fine.
Yeah.
We'll look it up. Okay, and what's like a book, or if you have, I don't know if you have an answer for this, but is there any book that was gifted to you that was really great or has like a special place in your heart?
Yeah, it's a great idea for a book, and I'm sort of jealous that she made it happen before I did. But my family, like many African-American families in the United States, were a product of the Great Migration.
Mm-hmm.
And so The Warmth of Other Suns was gifted to me. And
I just got chills.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorites.
Such a... And well done. Kudos to her. And it's a beautiful... You know, the gift was perfect for me,
mm-hmm.
and then also sort of reflected my own sort of backstory, and my mm-hmm. family's backstory was really, it sort of landed hard.
Where were your people from and where did they migrate to?
Georgia.
Okay.
And migrated up to Ohio.
Okay. I was Louisiana and we migrated to Oakland, California.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Yes.
That's which is very common in yes. the book. She actually, one of the main characters
yeah.
does that. He goes from Louisiana to Oakland and back down to LA. And
yeah.
here I am in LA.
And
so I guess I'm kind of following a predetermined destiny, mm-hmm. I guess, for my people. But
yes.
I read that book. I loved it so much. I actually had a trip planned to New Orleans and I ended up renting a car and driving to Baton Rouge, which is where my father's from, to go see the house that he was born in. And unfortunately, the house had been destroyed by the time I got there, but it was still amazing to, like, I just, the book was so powerful and talking about the journeys that African-American families go on leaving the South and all of that, that I just, like, it was so compelling. I mean, it won the Pulitzer, so, like, it's not a surprise that it's a good book. No. It's one of the best books that's been written that I've read in a long, long time. I think it won in 2010. Elizabeth Wilkerson wrote the book. No, Isabel Wilkerson wrote the book. And it's, I highly recommend it. I specifically recommend it to Black folks if you haven't read it. White folks, you can read it. Asian folks, you can read it. But it did something to me emotionally that I don't know. I don't know if other people will feel it in the same way.
I'll give you like an example of what it could do. I went on a trip with my grandparents to Africa. We went to South Africa, Ghana, and one more country that's not coming to my brain. And when we landed in Ghana, he immediately fell to his knees and kissed the ground.
Mm.
And I didn't quite understand it, but having read this book mm-hmm. and what you're saying about going to your homestead in New Orleans, it's something that if you've been taken away from where you're from mm-hmm. and returning, whether this is the reality, if mm-hmm. it actually, if this mm-hmm. is, if you're from Ghana or somewhere
right.
else, but somehow psychologically, emotionally, you feel like you've landed home.
Yeah.
And to have that reference in a book, mm-hmm. it validates mm-hmm. you, me, us.
Right. And a big book and a serious book and a well-received book and an awarded, like, there is something about that book having won awards that validates that experience even more. Not that I need the Pulitzers to tell me that that was a good book, but, like, yeah.
Yeah.
This is a serious book.
Yeah.
And she interviewed, like, it was, like, something like 1,200 people. And, I mean, it's, I'm grateful that the book also happened because so many of the people who experienced the Great Migration have passed on.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's important that she had those firsthand interviews and firsthand accounts of that experience because I can't believe it didn't exist before.
Exactly.
Because so many Black people experienced it and just never, you know, were able to write it down or got around to writing it down or had the time or the money or the resources. And
it was the silent move, you know, slowly trickling up north.
Yeah.
And it's really, it's the precursor to, you know, our state today.
Right, right.
The Black communities.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Oh, it's such a good book. Who gifted it to you?
I went to boarding school.
Okay.
And I had a host family and my host father did for Christmas one year.
Oh my God. What a great gift. Thank you, host father.
Yeah. Thomas Howley.
Yes. Thomas, shout out. Okay. This is like, listen, I don't even know how you follow that up. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break. We're going to hear from our sponsor and then we're going to come back. All right. So actually we're not even going to take a break. I'm just going to tell you about it. So our sponsor today is Audible. It's a place where you can get books to listen to. So Audible has over 180,000 book titles. I bet you they have Warmth of Other Suns. So if you want to listen to that delicious book, you definitely could. Also, Anna Karenina, another long one. Maddox loves it. You could listen to that too. All you do is you go to audibletrial.com/thestacks and you get a free 30-day trial plus a free audiobook. So you could use it on Crime and Punishment if you wanted. If you wanted to just get all your money's worth, all your free money's worth. So that's go to audibletrial.com/thestacks for your free 30-day trial and free audiobook. Okay, Maddox, let's come back to it. Let's see. Do you set any reading goals?
Well, because I love you, Tracy. I like just following your footsteps. And so
my
reading goal last year was 12 books a year.
Okay.
I failed.
I love failure. Failure is my favorite.
Right. And because I read so much for work that it's hard for me to read for pleasure.
Sure.
And so.
So you didn't include any books you read for work in your 12 books?
Well, I did, but
okay, you were also reading other things.
Yeah, I see. So it you know, but I also read scripts and I lost, but I did read six.
Okay,
so I was very proud about that.
That's good. It's a goal. Yeah. Goals are goals. They're not actually things.
I just wish I could, you know, unwind with a book and just not attach work to it.
Right. Right.
So
maybe you should read books that are like different than what you think could be work related. Do you know what I mean? Like read something that's like a totally different genre.
Yeah.
And then you're probably going to come across like the greatest book ever and be like, this should be a movie.
Right. That's a really great idea. I mean, even when I was younger, elementary school, this is coming to me. Like I was reader of the month.
Mm.
So it was like every month I would read the most and I was like, I'm going to win. And I represented my school in this all city competition.
That's the nerdiest thing I've ever heard, and I'm obsessed, and I wish my school had that.
Isn't it ridiculous?
I'm actually jealous right now that I was never reader of the month. That's amazing. So you'll get there.
I'll get there. The process.
Are there any genres that you really love or really like avoid?
Well, the genre that I love, I guess, is something that's really easy for me is like a mystery thriller.
Oh.
Like Dan Brown, for example.
Okay.
Like I can
Angels and Demons, is that who that is?
In
Da Vinci Code?
Exactly.
Okay. I read
Angels and Demons, it's just like the end of every chapter leads into the next one, like it propels you.
Okay. It's
like a TV show.
It's like a TV show.
Yeah. So it's an easy, good, juicy ride.
Okay. I like that. And is there any genre that you're not that into? Or that you have a hard time like getting through?
It's anything too techie.
Okay. Like
maybe sci-fi, I guess. Sure. I don't know.
Like, okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not super into like technical things.
But I would work on a sci-fi show if you're listening.
Can you make Kindred into a television show?
I think it's being adapted into a film, I believe.
It needs to be on the screen somewhere. It's like totally a movie or TV show.
I was trying to get the rights earlier this year, but...
It's already gotten.
Yeah,
dang.
It got gotten.
Okay. How do you read? Do you use ebook, hard copy, audiobook?
I'm an old school person. I need to feel the pages in my hand. Mm-hmm. So I need a hard copy. I have read books on my iPad.
Okay.
But... You know, and I've listened to books too, but I think it's dangerous. Sorry, Audible.
No, don't be sorry. Why is it dangerous?
Well, because I like to imagine when I'm reading, and if I'm imagining while I'm driving and listening, I would like hit things.
Swerve.
So I think you know that's the great beauty of reading is that you're able to look at the words but also imagine simultaneously. So I would think I would lose that.
That's so funny. Do you know so many people I know, they specifically like to listen to books when they're driving. Like in the car, they'll put on a book and like listen to a chat. Like if they're in traffic, especially here in LA. So for those people, Audible, trial/thestacks, free 30-day trial, free audiobook. Got it in. Okay. Where do you read or like what's your ideal reading setup?
My ideal reading setup is... either on the sofa or on the floor with my feet on the sofa.
Oh, little lower back release.
A little lower back.
Perfect. I like that. That's unique. Are there any books that you feel proud that you've read?
Yeah. Excuse me. A little cough.
It's okay.
This book by Barry Schwartz called Paradox of Choice.
Okay.
And you made me learn that choice is a good thing, an option.
Okay.
But what I learned is that we have so much choice in the world that it actually stifles us. It makes us not able to make a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, when I'm at a restaurant for dinner and there are 50,000 options, what am I going to eat?
What do you gonna eat? Like, do you want a grilled cheese or do you want a salad or do you want an omelet?
Right.
Like, it's too much.
Well, three I could do. I can. Okay, great. Those three choices. But when it's 20, 30, I'm like,
like a diner is too much.
Yeah, it's too much. Give me 3-5 choices. Yeah. Don't give me 20.
I feel that. That's so interesting. What the book's called The Paradox of Choice.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Okay, what about a book that you're embarrassed to have read?
Well, it's also the book that I recommend.
Wally Lamb is the most famous person on this podcast right now. Like, Wally Lamb is getting all the shine.
Right. I love him. But it's also like this, it's like a little, I feel for me, it feels like a girly book, but.
Okay. I see.
I'm okay with being a girl, you know, reading girly books, but it's not really a girly book, Wally Lamb, but.
But you loved it.
But I loved it.
And you think other people would love it.
Yes.
And you're still embarrassed.
And I'm still embarrassed.
That's so funny. I think that's what I'm learning is that people are often embarrassed about books that they read that they loved. I guess we all think that we should be reading certain things.
Right.
And that if they're not what we think our image of our reading life is, that it's like shameful. But Sarah last week, she is an ethnic studies PhD, and she focuses a lot on the Native American community and the indigenous community is also on slavery. And so her book was, I always say the wrong one. I said Anne of Green Gables, but it's the other one, Little House on the Prairie.
Oh, wow.
But because she loved it growing up, and now after doing all this work with indigenous communities and like, what is that book actually talking about and what does it mean? And, you know, my response was like, I love Gone with the Wind, but that doesn't fit like with who I am or who I think that I should be. And I think that it's interesting that you've also picked a book that you really enjoy, but doesn't fit with what you think about yourself.
But those two examples that you've given, I think you can now read that book with new eyes.
Sure. You know, but I still love it. Like I still love Gone with the Wind, and I know it's racist, and I know everybody, like, I know it means that I'm like not as woke as I want to be.
Right.
But I don't care.
Yeah, I still don't think.
But I am a little embarrassed about it. Like, I don't often recommend it to people because I don't want people to think I think that it's okay that Scarlett has a mammy. Like, I don't want people to think it's okay that she slaps Kizzy in the, or not Kizzy. What's her name? Kizzy is in Roots. What's her name? Oh my God, the girl's like, I don't know nothing about birthing no babies. Her. You know exactly who I'm talking about.
Exactly.
Anyways, but it's interesting. Because it said what books you're like embarrassed about say something about.
They represent you.
Yeah. It's part of you.
Yeah.
Same thing about like the book that you hate or choose not to admit that you didn't like. But those say something about you just as much as Crime and Punishment. Mm. And that's why I love reading. Because like you can really create a whole human out of just like the stuff that they'd read. Like you could pick 10 books and put them in a stack and be like, this represents me. And one of yours would be Wally Lamb, something by Wally Lamb.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm
not no longer on this earth, and you open up my library, you'll say, "Wow, he liked all of these books." And what's that down there?
Yeah. What's that? Like? That she's reading all these books about, you know, Black Lives Matter, and there's Gone with the Wind, and it looks very well worn as well. I'm very confused.
What a complicated, complex woman.
Yeah. Well, that's what we are. We are a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. You can find joy in something that. Maybe intellectually you think that you shouldn't.
Yes.
Joy is my favorite. Okay, back to it. What's a book that you're embarrassed that you've not yet read?
That's a hard one. There was a book last year that I really wanted to read before everyone was reading it, which was Hillbilly Elegy.
Oh, sure.
And now I feel like I would be reading it because everyone has read it.
Right.
So
kind of taking a moral stance on it.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm not going to read that because I don't want to be like,
I have a moral stance on that book too. Mm-hmm. I refused to read it in 2017 because everybody was like saying, that's how you understand a Trump voter. And I was like, you know what? No, thank you.
Yeah.
And then I just never really wanted to read it again.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand that. Yeah, it was so, everybody was so up on that book last year.
Yeah, and I knew about it before.
Before,
it was,
yeah.
And I didn't, and so
now you're like that ship has sailed. I feel that. What about a book that you love from your childhood?
When I went to boarding school, and I don't know if this is a real memory or if I made it up in my head, but I remember when I first landed at my host parents' home, they had a stack of books on my nightstand, and one of the books was Invisible Man.
Oh,
and so the transition from moving from Ohio to Massachusetts, Invisible Man sort of represents that for me. So that reminds me of that time.
Time in your life. I like that. Well, this kind of follows up. Is there a book you can think of where you saw yourself reflected back?
Yes. It was, I think reflection is so important in literature, in television, in film. In everything, politicians. And for me, it was Dreams from My Father by President Obama.
Oh, God. That book is really a special book.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost overshadowed by how far he ascended from that point. Mm-hmm. But if he had never become president, if he'd never had any political anything, he could have been an author based just on that book alone. It's seriously so amazing. It's so amazing. I'm glad he had political aspirations and continued forward. But, you know, when that, I think that book came out in the 90s.
Yeah.
I didn't read it until he was running for president. But I remember reading it and being like, actually, I listened to it on a long car drive, but I remember, and he narrated it. And I remember being like, yo, this is a special life.
Mm.
Like, this is an interesting and special life. Not everybody has so much to say.
Mm-hmm.
And he really, it's just so good. Ugh, I'm loving it. I'm loving this choice. Are there any books that maybe influenced your professional career or kind of, you know, where you are now?
Yes. When I first started writing, when I was acting at the Shakespeare Company, and a friend of mine always told me to write what you know.
Mm.
And during that time period, I read for the first time Giovanni's Room.
Mm.
And I was floored, just floored. And it touched me deeply, and it really unknowingly began my journey as a writer.
I love it. And we're going to talk a lot about that next week, but that's very interesting. It's very interesting. Do you have any favorite authors?
I do. My favorite author is André Debus.
Okay.
I was fortunate enough to have him as a professor in college.
Oh.
And
where did you go to college?
Tufts.
Oh, okay. In Boston.
And I had him, he was my professor for a couple of semesters. He was my thesis advisor and subsequently my mentor.
Mm-hmm.
And has become my friend. I'm, mm-hmm, you know, close with him, his whole entire family, his wife, his children. And, you know, he's always been extremely supportive of me when I went to grad school in New York and all, you know, all of these through all of these years. So anything by him is, you know, Blues Man, House of Sand and Fog, which was adapted. I think many of them will, mm-hmm, either they have been adapted into film or will be soon. Dirty Love, Townie, which I think is currently being adapted. But he's just a phenomenal author. He writes women well, men well, always different perspectives within each novel. And like I said earlier, he's coming up with this amazing anthology soon.
I'm excited. I've never read any of his stuff. I have to check it out.
Yeah.
Okay, my favorite question, which I have lovingly borrowed from the New York Times by the book. If you could require the President of the United States, the current one, to read one book, what would it be?
Ooh. Ooh, girl.
Always gets a reaction.
Yes.
I know.
And this is sort of a stretch because it's not one book, but okay. I would suggest the 10 plays by August Wilson.
Ooh, that cycle.
The cycle.
Mm, yeah.
You know,
juicy.
Sort of, right? It gives a whole, mm-hmm, history of, in
black
a theatrical
folk
way, black folk.
Yeah, sure. Sure. Listen, if you want to just read 9 and watch the Fences movie, that's fine too. Like, we'll let you off the hook.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I started this thing on Instagram. It's called Diversify Books. It's a place for people to post books that they love and to bring a little diversity into the book world on Instagram. So I'm going to ask you the questions verbally. So you won't be able to post a picture of your books. If you want to, you can, but just for now, we'll just talk about it. So the first question is, what's a book you love from before you were on social media?
The Bible.
Oh, by Jesus Christ? That one?
Amen, girl.
Or by Peter, Paul, and Mary? Who is it? I don't know. Who even writes a Bible? Is there an edition you love? King James?
You know, go ahead, King James. I like that. Yeah. I was gifted a Bible by my grandfather, who's a minister, when I was born, and I've carried it with me all through these years.
No one's ever said the Bible yet here. I like it. Okay, what's a book you love by a person from a different ethnicity than you?
Night.
Okay.
By
Eli Wiesel?
Yes.
Okay, got it. Wow. You're going with heavy hitters today. A book you're looking forward to reading by or about people of color?
Well, during my lunch with André Debus, he sort of said, go home and read Elizabeth Stroud, as well as James Baldwin's Sonny's Blues. So I've not read either of them. So
you're going to do that. Yeah. Okay. A book you love that you rarely hear people talk about.
It's a little small book. Not a small book. It's a big book, but small in its size.
Okay.
Called House on Mangle Street by Sandra Cisneros.
Yes, I've heard of that. Yes.
Yeah,
I want to read that.
It's really, really good.
Okay, yeah. That's so good to hear. Okay, a book you loved from a genre that you don't normally read, and then the genre that it comes from.
That's a good question. I don't know the genre, but it's called Predictably Irrational.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
You know,
it's kind of like pop psychology.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I have it.
Okay.
I know
it. Yeah, it's makes you realize that the things that you how you think isn't necessarily how you think.
Right. How you think that you think is not always how you think. It's kind of like how you love Wally Lamb, but it's like not you.
Yeah.
Sure. That book is really cool.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. It's kind of like Freakonomics-y or like Malcolm Gladwell-y, that kind of genre.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. Okay. Amazing. So we've come to the end of my questions for you. I'm going to give you a chance right now. Is there anything else that you want to say about your reading life or about you? You can also say, no, I'm done.
I think reading is fundamental. It's just to take the pause. Life is so busy. And I think even though it's what I do for a living, I think we get caught up with relaxing and decompressing with television. But I think the having a way into our imaginations aren't really being used to their fullest potential. And I think reading lends itself to that.
I love that. That's so good. Thank you. I'm going to let you have the last word on that. Well, not really. I'm going to have the last word. I'm bossy. No, I'm just going to tell everybody we will be back next week, Maddox and I, Chris Maddox and I. He goes by his last name a lot, so sorry, Chris or Maddox. Anyways, we'll be back next week. We're going to be discussing James Baldwin's Giovanni's Room. If you've yet to read the book, you still have about a week to do it. It's not long. It's like 180 pages. It goes so fast. It's great. I mean, it's a classic for a reason, so I don't think I have to talk it up too much, but check it out. I will link to that book as well, so if you need to get a copy, you can do that too. And we will be back next week with Christopher Maddox, myself, and James Baldwin's Giovanni's Room. All right, y'all. Thank you. Oh, and thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so that does it for us this week at The Stacks. Thank you all so much for listening. Please subscribe to The Stacks wherever you get your podcasts. Also, if you do listen to us on iTunes, feel free to rate and review us. It goes a long way and we super appreciate it. Thank you to our sponsor, Audible. If you want that free 30-day trial and free audiobook, go to audibletrial.com/thestacks. Again, I want to say thank you to Chris Maddox for joining us this week. Our graphic designer is Robin McCrite, and our theme music comes from Tagirigis. I am Tracy Thomas, and I created and produced this show. Thank you so much, and I'll see you all in the stacks.